Hello there, listeners and viewers. Ron Stefanski here for yet another episode of Disrupt Ed, where we talk to some pretty seamlessly ordinary people who are actually doing extraordinary things in this 5G wired workforce augmented, globally interdependent, technology interconnected, AI accelerated, pandemic interrupted, quantum computing ballistic world of work and learning. And so much of this new technology that I get to talk to people about is frankly just gobsmacking. And you've heard a number of people talking about these kinds of developments. You've heard from Jared Fink from Cosmic Wire working on Web3 applications. I mean, you've heard a lot of these stories that are just mind-blowing. And I have the privilege of geeking out with these folks because I'm naturally a nerd. I'm not a cool person, as I've said before. I was told by my teenage boys as I was trying to be cooler, no, Dad, you're never going to cut it, but I'm cool adjacent. So these cool cats in tech come to my parties. They come and listen and talk. And so today we have an amazing brainiac here who is doing some pretty extraordinary stuff in the world of quantum computing and finance. Welcome to the show, Sean Brehm from Spectral Capital. Sean, I've been so excited to get you on this show and to talk about what you're doing.
Well, thanks so much. I'm excited to be here. Apologize, I'm not wearing a sport coat today. I am in Estonia trying to stay warm today.
Yes, no, I totally get it. So as we were talking offline, I mean, any day you can be in Estonia, you can be in Dubai, you can be in Austin, Texas. I mean, you are transversing the globe. And one of the reasons people need to understand about quantum computing is that the talent pool and the resources for quantum computing are very, very limited and distributed. And so part of your success has been in bringing folks together, bringing talent together, bringing resources together to launch what is clearly going to be the next big thing in investing and also cryptography, all kinds of things. So tell us about your origin story. Give us a little bit of background into how you got to this place where you are.
Yeah, I know. It was either by divine intervention or divine accident. One of the two, I can't figure it out. I've always been a strong math guy, very love physics. And, you know, like everybody else, I needed college paid for. So, you know, I had it paid for the U.S. by the U.S. Army. And I went in the Army as a second lieutenant, infantryman, did all the classic, you know, infantry type stuff, went to Airborne school, Ranger school, did all the cool, got all the cool merit badges, went to combat. And then a point in my career, I had a chance to go to a program that just was one that we don't talk about much in the open. And it completely changed my view on things. I almost let slip, but, you know, but it completely changed my view on how the world really operated, especially when you get into concepts like defeat and defend. And from that moment on, I just realized that, you know, the world was different than I thought. And so I moved into really cool kind of technological approaches. And long story short, through that career, I found myself doing everything from crazy things with big data in Arab Spring to Spanish bombings, you know, a lot of really neat stuff. And basically, you know, when you get into counterterrorism and you get into counterintelligence, you know, there was so much data out there that we didn't know what we didn't know, and we didn't know what questions to ask. So you get really good at trying to build systems. So I found myself stumbling into the early stages of AI, ended up working at IBM, did some amazing things with some amazing people at IBM, in the combatant commands and special operations command, a bunch of really cool things that were kind of the precursors to what we know in AI today. Built a company that extended that, was able to, lucky enough to sell my first company, exit my second company. And then I had my wife and I were talking like what to do next. And I had a really, someday I'll kind of say it publicly who he was, but everybody knows him. Said, hey, Sean, what do you think of this company, OpenAI? And I took a look at it and started looking at what it was doing and, you know, discovered that the approach could be more efficient And then at the same time, my chief scientist, Dr. Cohn, says, "Hey, Sean, I really want to take your experience on what you did with dielectrics, and you know, I want to start getting into quantum pattern." I'm like, "Wolf, you know, it's you're looking at a patterning issue. I mean, we're already at 0.35 times 10 to the negative 18. How are we going to use photolithography to pattern a quantum ship? We're gonna have qubits bouncing all over the map." And he goes, "I got this really good idea. I want to leverage the use of things like cellulose and polymers, and then I won't go into that." So now, next thing I know, we're building a quantum chip. And then as we're going through the quantum chip, we're like, well, what's the practical merge between the two? Well, and then what's the whole reason you build a quantum chip, and what's the whole reason you have quantum computing to begin with? And right. When you ask that to a lot of people, I'd be curious just to bounce it back at you. And when you ever ask anybody why we need quantum computing?
No, but I assume a lot of people don't know the answer to it. But I certainly don't. I'm one of those.
At the end of the day, it's about data. I mean, the part that is just, we live in a fantastic age. I mean, like, I'm a big fan of history. I love history. And what's going to happen, the people that win in quantum are going to dominate the global economy for the next 50 to 100 years. Dominate it. And what the epiphany it hit, because I was doing cybersecurity at the time, what hit me is that even though cybersecurity technology was supposedly improving each day, we're going up to $11 trillion in cybercrime. So we're still losing.
Like, right. So it's still, no, it's exploding. I mean, it's gone crazy, and it's more deleterious, right? It's not just companies held out for ransom. It's cities, it's ports, it's water exactly. supply. And, you know, with Bolt Typhoon, I mean, it warranted the attention of the U.S. Senate. I mean, it's plugged into a lot of different places, and it's replacing traditional warfare in many respects. We have rogue 100%. Actors that are implanting yep. these kinds of things in places that could do serious damage to our security.
100%. So when I started looking at AI, and then the first time I actually was able to write in the early stages of some of the response AIs, I won't tell you who they were, I was able to write a really, really, really good malicious piece of software. And I remember looking at what I wrote, and I'm like, wait a minute. Did it occur to anybody to like put people first in this thing? I mean, Isaac Asimov did, right? The three laws of robotics. So you would have thought whoever was building this first version of AI, would use some kind of deterministic process to say, hey, is this going to enable the ability to harm humans, or is it going to be able to enable the ability to harm another form of AI or a robot? Unless it's saving a human. And I went, no, there's no deterministic process. On top of that, there's no ability to really vector for truthiness. There's no entropic modeling using. And I just started, I said, wow. And I was, and my wife looked at me and she said, solve it. And I laughed at her. You know, here we are 7 years later.
And you listen to her.
I listened to her. Always listen to your wife, right?
Yes, exactly. No, I've been the beneficiary of that wisdom myself after 38 years. So let me ask you this. You know, what I love about this story is how you're talking about something that most of us don't know much about. And yet, yeah. at the same time as you're describing it, forces are underway, which are going to unleash the power of this in a way yeah. that is going to completely transform industries, right? So I was talking with Jared Fink, another tech entrepreneur who's building tools for Web3, and they're going to launch an extraordinary immersive experience in Q1 2025 just to showcase yep. this stuff. And Sean, yeah. what I notice is that you have something in common with my friend Jared, and that is you know how to take these incredibly complex ideas and thoughts and distill them for people like me who don't, you know, who don't really get it and yeah. want to learn. And you have a way of simplifying it. You're like the explainer in chief of your company, you know? So let me understand, you know, from a business
thank my first platoon sergeant, my first real first sergeant, by a guy named Steve Rondo. A lot of those guys in the Ranger community will know Steve Rondo. He used to say, sir, you need to dumb it down for the rest of us. So I took that to heart.
No, and I think you're really good at that. So in a nutshell, when you're looking at the uses of your quantum computing tools from yeah. a business perspective, you're getting ready to do this with limited resources and networked across the globe, because the talent for this, for developing this technology, is really the biggest, it's really the biggest breakpoint, right? It's really the biggest bottleneck for you in terms of really growing. This is that a lot of people can't operate on this level.
No, you're
Fair
right. And
statement?
so that's precise the constraint that you just discussed, constraint management here is resources. And so the other thing was when we were looking at the constraint side of it, we realized, well, another famous thing to all the other veterans out there, you got to crawl before you walk, before you run. So we started backward planning sequence from when this quantum chip would be ready to what we could do today. And what we realized was we were discussing, my chief scientist and I, Dr. Wolf Kahn, we were going, well, why do we need quantum computing other than us understanding the impact on cybersecurity and everything else? And we were talking about it, and I'm like, well, data's the new oil. And so if you look at data, if you look at oil, oil's just dead, lumpy dinosaur. It's former, it comes from life. And you basically ref you get all these petroleum engineers and you refine it, and you can create different kinds of fuel, types of fuel. You can create rocket fuel for Elon Musk. You can create fuel that powers, diesel engines. You can create fuels that powers the Range Rover, or you can create fuel that powers the Kia, right? Whichever grade of fuel you need. So essentially what you're doing is you're taking a raw material, oil, you're using petroleum engineers, and you're refining it into information. So it's really information is just data with value. Data plus value is
Data
information. And
refined, in other words,
it's
bringing
refined.
additional value
Quantum
in different
computing
data sets at
allows us
different
to
levels,
refine it
fueling different
faster.
businesses, right?
Exactly. And so quantum computing helps us refine that not only into information, but I'm going to go on the limb here. I did this, I got a little flack for what I said in Newsweek recently. But what you're going to see for a period of time between quantum computing and AI, sorry for all you ETF funds out there, but AI is eventually going to, it's going to run parallel with quantum, but it's eventually going to come out of
Yes.
quantum.
Yep.
And the reason why is if you are basically refining all these remote data points spatially, temporally, thematically, and then you're aligning them in a semantic way so that Ron gets it at the right time when he needs it, then you're going to have to leverage some really cool machine learning type concepts on the fly. And now you start talking about, well, wait a minute, I got co-occurrence of data, convergence of data. It's running through a qubit or a gbit if it's GreenWave. Now you all of a sudden you're seeing entanglement in a really good way. And that entanglement is a coalition of two separate data sets. So now all of a sudden you're getting into the idea of collective intelligence rather than artificial
Right.
or what I like to call more authentic intelligence.
Well, it's also, I think blockchain plays a role in this, because blockchain's helping to fuel a level of transparency or a level of usage and application in Web3, where you can have access to a distinct, discrete, only one of a kind in a billion particles of the universe piece of data. And I think blockchain is going to be fueling quantum computing, as I understand it and as you've been describing it, because ultimately you're moving us far past the limits that we've had for a long time, that computing have brought us to it has brought us to a certain point. But this is going to take us, I mean, it's almost like moving from a chessboard to 3D chess, where
It
you're
is. I was just talking to a good friend of mine. We just expanded our development team into Serbia recently, and my good friend Jay sat down with me, and he knows my nickname from the military. Says, like, Hollywood, what do you think the impact going to be? My guys are really big into crypto, and I said, look, cryptocurrency provides that, and blockchain provides that immutability. When you
right.
combine a ledger, when you combine a ledger that has
Ledger.
immutability and transparency, and then you combine it with a quantum ledger database, now what you've done is, I would tell your friend, he's going to go quickly beyond Web3 to Web5, because now you can move the custodianship of data into a quantum ledger database that literally defines ontological rules for the authentic intelligence. And when we get off the call, I'll do the same thing I did for the other guy. I'll show you it working. It's mind-boggling, where you can have a conversation with the data that you've been authentically allowed to access to. And if you don't have access to data and you ask it a question, here's a unique thing about authentic intelligence. It will say, I don't know. I don't know. So now all of a sudden, data privacy rules king. You get the immutability and transparency of a blockchain connected to a custodial source of a quantum ledger database that is now both preparing us for the quantum chips that are on the horizon. Look, there are already quantum chips out there, but the reason why there's a horizon, nobody wants to talk about it, is you got to go to all the traditional semiconductor manufacturing tool sets and get them to move their tool sets for a quantum process flow. And that's Kaizen Six Sigma stuff. That takes a while.
Right.
So that's a whole.
That's going to take a while, right? So that's not going to necessarily scale. It's not going to scale immediately because you have a lot of tools and a lot of infrastructure basically to build out to get quantum computing to where you're taking it. I mean, you've got a wild ride, but officially heads exploded now. My head has exploded. This is so. You know, to our listening and viewing audience, you've been listening to Sean Brehm at Spectral Capital. I mean, it's crazy what he's on the make to do here. It's really going to change things. And I have to say, you know, before we wrap this, I'm bringing you back, Sean, because we got so much more to talk about. But before we wrap this episode, it seems to me that one of the coolest things about blockchain, the ledger system, and then the quantum system, ledger system to follow in quantum computing, is that you're actually making the world that we're going to inhabit safer than it is currently.
100%. I'm a big fan of that. I will tell you the very first thing, you know, this is, I'm not pushing my opinions on anybody, but, you know, the very first thing, you know, I taught our quantum ledger database was I pulled in Genesis and just started putting some kind of efficacy rules. I taught it the three laws of robotics, right? So, and when you get into safety of where we're going is imagine if you're taking a database that's kind of self-growing and self-thinking that's got a ledger associated with it, and that can communicate with traditional cryptocurrencies, but it's following a deterministically concurrent process that says, okay, when we write this data, is it going to do any harm to people? And oh, by the way, when we write it and we post it, how do we start measuring truthiness in it? And now you start invoking things like Jonathan Locke and the Federalist Papers. We're like, okay, well, this is how we start getting into a collective intelligence that kind of takes the Federalist Papers and embodies them within a corpora of data. And then you expand that into a new kind of intersection of commercial and capital markets we'll talk about next time, where you reinvigorate the original Buttonwood Agreement. I mean, it's just got so many things that'll change the economy.
That's where I want to take this conversation. So to our listening and viewing audience, you've been listening to Sean Brehm explode my head with the work he's doing at Spectral Capital with quantum computing. This is so exciting. I've just lost my mic. But listen, we're going to have Sean back in episode 2, and you're going to hear more about how this technology is actually going to impact us in positive and exciting ways. So stay tuned. We've got more to follow.